Well, today being Defence Sunday, I've asked Greg, or should I say Lieutenant Colonel, Greg Rosser, to share with us today. So please, Greg, come and share.
Okay. Looks different from up here. Archbishop Jeff has asked all parishes to make today Defence Day, and specifically to pray for and focus on the Anglican chaplains. I would like to extend this to cover chaplains of all denominations. I would also like to mention that in the army, most soldiers will actually call the chaplains padre. It's the going term. It's a bit like we use the term reverend and father. They are synonymous. So if I use the word padre, you'll understand that I'm actually talking about chaplains. In John's Gospel, chapter 15, verse 13, tells us that Jesus said, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." We all know Jesus died for us, but there are also countless stories of soldiers sacrificing their own lives so that others could live. We'd just like you to watch a short video clip.
Good morning. We're here today at the Royal Australian Navy Memorial in Canberra to celebrate Defence Sunday, a time when we come to ask you to partner with us in supporting Anglican Defence Chaplaincy. If you're not aware, the Anglican Church provides suitably qualified people to be Defence Chaplains, and Defence Sunday is an opportunity to firstly thank the members of the Defence Force for their work, secondly, to remember those who have served in war and peacekeeping, and thirdly, to highlight the work of the Anglican Church among defence personnel and their families through defence chaplaincy. As you can appreciate, our defence force relies on people. Without people, we have no defence force, and the sacrifices made by Australians for our country are significant. See, while you're busy at work, asleep or play, it's great to know someone is busy ensuring the safety of our nation, ultimately you and your family. In times of conflict, Australians will step up and do their bit. When challenged with adversity, some will step out and do the extraordinary, not because they're tapped on the shoulder, but because they said, "If I don't do this, who will?" That was the case in 1942, when war was on Australia's doorfront. A young 18-year-old from Tasmania joined the Royal Australian Navy to do his bit. The corvette HMAS Armidale was sent to reinforce Australians harassing the Japanese around Timor. On the 1st of December 1942, in the Arafura Sea en route to Timor, Armidale was attacked by Japanese bombers, fighters and a float plane. She was hit twice by torpedoes and the order was given to abandon the sinking ship. The aircraft returned to machine gun survivors in the water. Ordinary seaman Teddy Sheehan, although twice wounded, made his way to the aft gun and began firing at the aircraft to protect those in the water, bringing down one and damaging two planes. He was still firing when the ship sank, drowning him. Sheehan saw that something needed to be done, and he did the extraordinary. Today, our Anglican chaplains are there in the Navy, Army and Air Force. They do their bit and sometimes they do the extraordinary. Whether in peace or conflict, the chaplains are a presence and a voice to support our defence personnel and their families. They come alongside those who are in the field, on a ship, those who are grieving, those who are suffering personal hardship, or those needing support and confidence in what they're doing. They're there for the ups and downs of life, right beside our service personnel. Life as an Anglican Defence Chaplain can be very rewarding and very challenging.
Some of the parishioners here would know I've been in the Army. I was involved in the setting up of the memorial down the side of the church. But for those of you who didn't, it's pretty obvious now when I put my uniform back on. And I'm pleased to see that it actually fitted me. So that was even better. Like a lot of men my age, I was one of the lucky ones who won the National Service Lottery. My birth date, for those of you who don't understand, they had in the National Service back in the 1960s and early 70s, all young men actually went into a ballot, and they drew out birth dates, and my date was one of the lucky ones. The only lottery I've ever won, but at the end of the day, I was a winner. And I do think I was a winner. I started my National Service with my recruit training at Pakapanyul. It was tough, but it was fair. But while I was there at the recruit training, I'd actually applied before I went in to do the officer training course. And I did all my assessments and things, and fortunately I passed. So after I finished my recruit course, the first thing I did was I went to Skyville, which is just out of Sydney, and I spent the next 6 months there doing officer training. As Bev will attest, in November that year I graduated, and she came over to partner me on my graduation at the ball when I graduated, so that was very good. So I graduated as a second lieutenant, and I graduated into the Corps of Ramie. Now, Ramie is different to the normal, a lot of people say, which battalion were you in or which regiment were you in. It isn't like that. We are attached to every army unit within the army, and we are all the tradespeople. We've got vehicle mechanics, we've got mechanical people doing fitters, and we also have electricians. So we basically do all of that. And I think it was a great corps to be in. And with my mechanical background, it suited me very well. When I graduated, it was to Ramie, but I was posted to the Ramie Training Centre, which is in Wodonga in Victoria, just across the road, across the river from Albury. And people asked me, did you go to Vietnam? And I have to say, no, I didn't go to Vietnam, but I was heavily involved in the training of a lot of the tradesmen that we actually sent, Ramie sent to Vietnam. So it was quite a busy time, as you can understand. But then for the last 4 months, for some reason unknown to me, the Army decided to post me back to the workshop in Adelaide. And Bev enjoyed that. That was very good for her. So after completing my 2 years in the Army, I actually went back to my civilian employer, but also I actually joined the CMF, which is now currently the Army Reserve. And I served in the Army Reserve for 35 years. They kept saying... I kept saying to myself, if I keep enjoying it, I'll stay on. So I kept going because I was enjoying it, and they kept saying, go and do this course and go and do that course. And 35 years later, well, probably 20 years later, I was a lieutenant colonel. So, and there was really nowhere else for me to go. So I stayed as a lieutenant colonel in various postings around South Australia. But I have to say, I thoroughly enjoyed my time both in National Service and in the Reserve. As you can see, or I wouldn't have stayed. In today's sermon, I'm actually going to focus on some of the chaplains I've met, and I must say, all the chaplains I've known, I have the utmost respect. My first real interaction with a chaplain was after one of my trainees was killed in a car accident returning home from a weekend break. The police had actually notified the family, but my commanding officer asked me to accompany one of the chaplains to visit the family and sort out the funeral details. They lived on a rural property in Victoria, so I drove 200 kilometres not knowing what to expect. Were the parents going to be angry? Were they going to be grieving? Was I going to get a hostile reception? Always the worst scenario. You always think about what's the worst that could happen. I needn't have worried. While the parents were upset, the chaplain quickly had everything in hand, and the situation was sorted out, and we were soon sitting down having a cup of tea and some biscuits. The chaplain, to his credit, sorted out the funeral details while we were there, and I have to say it was one of the most moving funerals that I've actually been to. We took all the trainees from his course, went there, and so the funeral was presided over by his family priest, but also the army chaplain, and our soldiers actually made a guard of honour for the coffin. The second incident I'd like to talk about was when I was back in Adelaide, and as a normal process, all of the young officers were actually rostered on as overnight duty officers. Got to remember, this was Vietnam. Things could come in at various times that needed handling immediately, and that was our task, to handle things that happened were needed to be done immediately. But one of the worst issues that we had was if we got a notocaz, and that was when a South Australian soldier had either been killed or seriously injured, and we had to go and tell the family. Fortunately, they had a senior officer and a chaplain rostered on if that happened, and we had to go, and when anything happened, we had to call them both and then go and pick them up on the way to see the family. As a 21-year-old, I only had one of these notocazes, but that was enough. You can imagine what the family felt when two officers and a chaplain arrived unannounced at your house. Fortunately for us, the chaplain took the lead, told the family what had happened, and we prayed together for their fallen son. It was a terrible thing to have to do, but better than the family hearing it on the radio. After I got out of National Service, I attended a number of the Army Reserve exercises, and most of the and all of the major units had a chaplain attached. If you asked any of the soldiers, they'd say, "What's the role of the chaplain or the padre?" And they would say, "Oh, just to take the Sunday service." But I'm here to tell you that it's actually a lot more than that. They were always there, but never obvious. They just wandered around and they'd come and talk to the soldiers as they were having a break or having a meal. They were at the hospital checking out what was going on. If anyone was sick, they would pray with the people. And certainly they had a very important task in the in and around the exercise. But the one I'd like to talk about was one that used to bring his Jack Russell dog with him to camp. And I think it was probably one of the smartest things they did. He did talk to me later, and he said that even if they weren't Christians, they would always stop and have a chat about the dog. So it was certainly an icebreaker. Interestingly, while I was running a recruit training camp at Hampstead Barracks, I noticed one of the new recruits was Reverend Peter Lynn. Now, you might remember Peter. He was a curate here some years ago, and he'd actually become a priest, and he decided that he wanted to become a padre or a chaplain as well. And he was doing a modified recruit course for special service officers. And how better to get trained than marching, saluting and basic military skills than joining with the other recruits. I spoke to him after the course and he said he thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a modified, so they only did the bits that were relevant to his course. But the thing is, even as a chaplain, you've still got to be able to march and you've still got to be able to salute. You've got to look like an officer. And they did have officer rank. Chaplains are of the ranks. Chaplain 1 is equivalent to a captain, Chaplain 2 is equivalent to a major, and Chaplain 3 is equivalent to a lieutenant colonel. So, after I retired from the Army, I actually joined the Army Museum of South Australia. I'm still involved even today. And at that stage, they had about 80 volunteers, most of them ex-military. So there were a number of issues that the soldiers had. But we also had a retired chaplain or padre. They used to call him padre. And he used to come in on Wednesday. We normally, most of the volunteers come in on Wednesdays, and they go around doing all the bits and pieces. We've got people doing repairs, we've got people looking after uniforms, we've got people looking after the archives, all the books and things, and also running the museum. So it's quite a busy time and people are doing different things. But he would just wander around and sit and talk to the various people. When I actually joined as a volunteer, but then they asked me to go on the board, which I did. And then a bit later, I became the chairman of the board, and then I suddenly found that the padre would come and sit and have a coffee with me almost every Wednesday, and say, "Oh, look, I don't know if you know, but Volunteer X, his wife is not very well, or volunteer, why? It's got family issues. And he was telling me these things just so I knew, in case I'd missed. I certainly probably had missed most of them. But because of our discussions and those sort of things, we actually set up a wellness and support program for all the volunteers. And I think it was one of the best things that we actually did, and still running today. Unfortunately, that chaplain is no longer with us here on earth, but I'm sure he's up in heaven sorting out the issues and possibly delicately mentioning to God how things should be done. I'd now like to pay my respects by saying the ode. They shall grow not old, as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun, and in the morning, we will remember them.
We will remember them.
Lest we forget. Just like to close with a prayer. Today we remember and pray for the members of the Australian Defence Force, and in particular we pray for Bishop Grant Dibden, the Anglican Bishop to the Defence Force, and for our military chaplains, both past and present, who have and continue to provide comfort and support to our military personnel. Their ministry covers soldiers and their families in times of both peace and war, and we will be forever grateful for their ongoing commitment to our country and to the soldiers, sailors and airmen who continue to keep us safe. Amen.